Imagine you get called up for jury duty. You listen to the arguments, you consider the evidence, you participate in the jury deliberations. Along the way, you also ask God for guidance, and you believe He answered your prayer, and that gets you kicked off the jury. Hi, I'm Stuart Shepherd, and this is First Liberty Live. Before we get started, you'd be a great help to us if you would remember to like and share our videos. If you enjoy these and benefit from them, your friends and family likely will as well, so they would enjoy seeing them. We make that easy for you to do at our website at firstlibertylive.com. My friend and colleague, Leah Patterson, is here. She is one of our attorneys here at First Liberty Institute. Hi, Leah.
Good morning.
Tell me what happened to juror number 13.
Well, juror number 13 was one of the jurors who was deliberating on a federal criminal trial back in 2017. The jury had been deliberating for about a day and a half or so when one of the other jurors, that's juror number 8, reported to the judge that juror 13 had said that a higher being told him the defendant was not guilty. So the judge called juror 13 in and asked him a few questions. First, the judge asked him if he had any religious beliefs that were preventing him from considering the law and the evidence according to the court's instructions. Juror 13 responded, no. Then the judge asked him some more questions, and the juror explained that he had prayed about this and that he trusted the Holy Spirit. The judge then removed juror 13, explaining that this statement, that juror 13 believed he had received the Holy Spirit's guidance, was, quote, a bridge too far and not compatible with jury service. So that decision to take the juror off the jury during deliberations was appealed to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals.
And all of us, I think, if either ourselves or we have friends who speak in that kind of language about asking God for guidance and then feeling like He's led us, or some people will even say, God told me to do this. I mean, it's common in, for us as Christians to hear that. And to be clear, all of this happened in the course of a criminal trial, but First Liberty got involved specifically because of the concern over religious liberty and the threat because of this juror being dismissed.
That's right. And, you know, I'd like to explain the impact to religious liberty a bit that this case could have. So plenty of cases explain that jurors in general are allowed to pray for guidance. But what this case deals with is whether a juror who prays for guidance is entitled to believe that he receives it, essentially to believe that his prayers are effective. So if the belief that God answers prayer and provides guidance is enough to remove someone from a deliberating jury, it's certainly more than enough to disqualify someone who shares that belief, the trust in the Holy Spirit's guidance, from jury service altogether. Now, I know you might be thinking, oh, it's just too bad. I don't have to go to jury service,
right? I think a lot of people are thinking that right now.
But, you know, the jury is one of our fundamental constitutional institutions. The reason is that the founders saw the jury as one of the people's limitations on a potentially overzealous government. And it's for that reason that a jury is supposed to represent a cross-section of the community, a community drawn from people with various different backgrounds, various different religious beliefs, who express themselves and think in various different ways. So basically, in a nation that values religious tolerance, the government should really expect that people are going to pray about this daunting responsibility of considering whether one of their peers is guilty of a crime.
We're going to unpack that thought more as we go along. Keep going.
Sure. Well, I was going to say that you know, someone shouldn't be automatically disqualified because they express themselves in religious language and have a faith that they express.
Now, while we were preparing for this, I got this in the mail. I got my very own jury summons in my mailbox while I was writing the script for this. It made me laugh when I saw it. And when I went online and filled out, you know, it's all this process, I was immediately dismissed. And it made me think about the fact that when, and most people have dealt with jury service along the way one way or another, it's very common for any reason to be dismissed before the trial starts, when they bring in a pool of jurors and they ask you all kinds of questions about your life and what you do and what you think about things. And many people get kicked out there, and that's not a big deal, just like I was dismissed for this one. But it strikes me that it's a very big deal when that happens after the trial has already been underway and deliberations have already started. It is a big deal to remove a juror at that point in the process, right?
That's absolutely right. So in order to dismiss a juror in the middle of deliberations, the judge has to find beyond a reasonable doubt that that juror is unable or unwilling to consider the evidence and follow the court's instructions. So, you know, like you were saying, in jury selection, you can get thrown off because the prosecutor doesn't like the color of your hair, right? But when you're on a jury deliberating, it takes the same standard it takes to convict someone of a crime to take you off of that deliberating jury.
Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Exactly. And there's an important reason for that, is that, you know, when you've got a jury deliberating, the unanimous jury verdict is one of the core constitutional rights and protections, rather, that play into the criminal trial.
Yeah.
And if, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
And if you yank somebody off of a deliberating juror, there's always going to be that question, were they taken off because they weren't following the court's instructions, or were they taken off because they didn't agree with their peers and didn't believe that the government had proved their case? So that undermines the verdict, and that's why the standard is so high.
And those arguments were brought up by the chief judge at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. This case has been around for a while. The first time through at the appeals court, a three-judge panel dismissed it. But Chief Judge William Pryor strongly disagreed. He wrote a lengthy dissent. I read much of it. It went on for 65 pages, I think.
It did.
And he quoted the oath that's commonly given to jurors. I want to share with you a little bit of what he wrote. He wrote, and this is a quote from the oath, "Do each of you solemnly swear that you will well and truly try the case now before this court and render a true verdict according to the law, evidence, and instructions of this court," and this is the key part, "so help you God." And then he adds, "Every juror who was impaneled in this trial swore this oath. One of them was dismissed because he apparently meant it." Now, we've all heard, because we watch crime dramas, and maybe we've been sworn in on a jury, we've heard the phrase, "so help me God." Unpack what that really means. What does it mean when you take the oath and say, "so help me God"?
Well, what it's really doing is invoking God's punishment to ensure the faithfulness of jurors, to make
sure
that
on you.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So I think, you know, just to keep quoting Judge Pryor, I think he put it best that if the court can invoke God's punishment to ensure faithful juries, then surely jurors are entitled to rely on divine aid to avoid that punishment.
Yeah. Which is what that juror did. I mean, he
right.
He sought God's guidance, felt that he had received it, and we don't know how the trial would have ended up.
Mm-hmm.
The concern here is whether it was right for him to have been removed because he expressed that, sought God's guidance, which, as William Pryor points out, every juror swears an oath to do that, so you would hope that they would. Now, the first time around, and we mentioned this, a three-judge panel heard the case. Earlier this week, it went back to what's called an en banc hearing, where literally all 12 of the judges on the 11th Circuit all gather together, and they hear it again. What is that en banc hearing? What's the significance of it, and how did it go this time around?
Sure, absolutely. So almost all federal appeals cases are heard originally by a panel of three judges that are drawn randomly from the larger pool of judges that make up that particular circuit court of appeals. So an en banc rehearing is pretty unusual, and it occurs where all of those judges in that circuit sit together to reconsider a case anew.
And that's got to be a little ominous to sit there and see all the judges in front of you.
Especially on Zoom. That was a different experience, say. And so en banc cases are very rare. They only happen in unusual cases that raise particularly significant questions.
I went and looked, and there were about a half dozen last year that they did out of the hundreds of cases that they took last year.
Right, exactly. So they only take cases that are worth the entire court's attention, and cases that are decided at that level carry more weight and binding precedent than other cases do.
Yeah. So during that, one topic that got quite a bit of attention, I need to mention that a friend of ours, Paul Clement, argued, he spoke in favor of the juror in this particular case. He's one of the best attorneys in the country. He's argued at the Supreme Court more than 100 times. He served as Solicitor General for a while. So he's one of the best attorneys in the country. I mean, it's no overstatement to say that. He also happens to be one of our volunteer network attorneys here at First Liberty Institute, and we've worked with him over the years. One topic he dealt with that got quite a bit of attention earlier this week when they heard this case again was the idea of standard of review. And that's a term of art in the legal realm. What does that mean, and why was that so at issue in this case?
Right. So in a case like this, it isn't just enough for the appeals court to disagree with the way the trial judge came out. The trial judge gets some deference because, you know, he was the boots on the ground. He was seeing the people, talking to the people. But the appeals court just has a transcript to work off of. So the big question here is, you know, we know that the trial judge gets some deference in how he decided, but how much deference is appropriate in a case like this? That was a big question. I'd also like to go into a lot of the argument kind of centered around trying to understand what Juror 13's invocation of the Holy Spirit meant in relation to the jury deliberation process. So I'd like to point out a couple of key points here.
Sure.
First, kind of other cases, other examples of instances where jurors have been taken off of a deliberating jury involve circumstances where the juror just flat out refused to deliberate, refused to discuss it with their peers. They refused to follow the law, for example, or refused to consider the evidence. But here, the record we have shows that Juror 13 was deliberating, and that's actually something that Juror 8 testified to. He was deliberating. He was participating in the process, and that he by and large, discussed his prayers in terms in relation to the evidence that had been presented in the case. So one of the things that Judge Pryor pointed out in his dissent before the panel opinion was, you know, as long as the object of his prayers was an honest attempt to discern the facts from the evidence and apply the law to those facts, his prayerful meditations are no less valid a form of deliberation than any other form of deliberation.
And I think it's what most of us would do, because that's an awesome responsibility, because you're considering whether someone should go free or be sent to jail. I mean, often in a criminal case, that's the way this plays out. So it would make sense that we would ask God to help us understand what's in front of us.
Absolutely. And for so many religious believers, prayer is just a part of the decision-making process every day that's as natural as breathing. So that shouldn't be disqualified automatically as part of the deliberations.
Now, you've talked about this a little already, but I'd like to ask you as a question. If this juror's dismissal should be allowed to stand, what would be the impact on Christians and people of faith around the country?
Well, in the 11th Circuit, so that's Alabama, Georgia, or Florida, it could disqualify anyone who believes that they received the Holy Spirit's guidance from jury service. Or, you know, the potential jurors could be asked pretty invasive questions about their faith in the jury selection process, or they might just get presumptively removed from the jury under the assumption that they hold that religious belief that's disqualifying. And it's pretty hard to tell how sweeping this could end up, because, you know, we don't have a decision in front of us, but we do have the panel decision and how far it went. And I think what Judge Pryor pointed out in his dissent is that, you know, this could potentially disqualify millions of people, including many Christians, from serving on a jury.
Because a lot of people pray and expect to hear back from God. I mean, that's a large portion of the population here in the United States.
Exactly. And one of the things Judge Pryor pointed out is that, you know, every prayer implies the hope that it's going to be answered.
All right. Now, everybody wants to know, what happens next? When might we hear a decision? What's your best guess?
Sure. So what happens next is all 11 judges who considered the case will be deciding how it comes out and writing their opinions. So we'll hear sometime in the next few months, probably this summer at the earliest, but who can tell?
Yeah, you never know. It appears when it appears, and they don't tell you in advance.
They do not, no.
Hey, Leah, thank you so much for sharing your insights today. Very helpful.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for your interest in the work we do here at First Liberty Institute. If this case resonates with you, if you feel like jurors should be free to pray to God and expect to hear an answer, remember to like and share this video. And if you want to know when we release new content, you can subscribe at firstlibertylive.com. Look for the big blue button. We'll let you know so you don't miss anything every time a new episode comes out. And finally, if you're concerned about faith is treated inside the courtroom and out, would you please consider supporting us here at First Liberty Institute? Together, we can influence outcomes that lead to a better country for our children and grandchildren. Next week on First Liberty Live, next Thursday, we'll have a very interesting conversation with a pastor in Nebraska whose church is growing, but the city doesn't want them to be able to build on property that they already own. And we'll unpack that case for you and tell you all about it. We'll see you here next Thursday.